Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Reinbold.
Hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We're sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by my partner, Jeff Reinbold. We're going to look at some news from around the NFL. We're going to get back into our State of the Franchise series this week, looking at 3-9-7 teams who failed to make the playoffs in Houston, San Diego and Kansas City. We'll get to your questions in the mailbag as well. But first, I have to start with Jeff. How was your holiday?
It was awesome. It was awesome. Anytime you get a chance to get in the water and get in the sun, it's good for me. So, but I'm ready. Let's go. Let's get back at this. This is fun.
Did you miss me?
I absolutely did. You know what? And I know you're such a sun guy that you would have loved it down there in Cabo, hanging on the beach.
Listen, when I get a bit of sun on the bald spot, it makes the whole head look better. That's my motto. Let's look at some of the news then. The owners' meetings are taking place at the moment in Arizona. There's 23 proposed rule changes on the table. Probably not worth getting into those until we know which ones are assigned. So we'll probably revisit those next week. But I did note with interest, Jeff, on the eve of the owners' meeting, Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, was talking again. It looks like four games in the UK in 2016. Again, continued support right from the very top of the NFL for the UK.
Yeah, I think it really is an interesting time right now here in the National Football League. Great news again about, you know, the what's going on with the games in London and the push to have more games. And, you know, I think that's, you know, really, really positive. I can't see any negatives in anything when you talk about the international series. Those London games have been such success, and you guys have done such a great job that, I think it's going to continue to expand, and that's positive. That's all positive messages.
Mm. We'll talk a bit more about the owners' meeting next week then, because obviously those meetings are still ongoing. Look at the rule changes that come about. Lots of talk about Los Angeles, of course. I've got a question in the mailbag about that we'll get to a little bit later on. One thing I wanted to touch on with you, Jeff, which I found interesting this past week, was the veteran combine. The NFL, for the first time, has held a veteran combine. And it's interesting because there were some big names in this class of players. And this is it's a little bit interesting because they actually pay to go to this combine because they want a chance to get back into the NFL. But you look across the board, there were Felix Jones, Michael Sam, Michael Bush of the formerly of the Chicago Bears and Raiders there. The one thing I noted, Jeff, was some very slow times in the 40. And I wanted to ask you about this, because at what point would you as a coach, if somebody said to you, okay, player X wants to come and try out for Hamilton, at what point, how many years would they be out of the league before you would be saying, you know what, I don't think they should even try? Because it looks like some of these guys, it's just a comeback too many and they've been out too long.
Well, if you take a guy like Felix Jones, for example, now, again, age, he's at a position where age is, you know, they decline very fast at running back. You've got some injury history with it. Mm. And then he goes out and runs, you know, a disappointing 40 time, I'm certain, for him. And, you know, that he was not the Lone Ranger in that regard. I think what this thing did for a lot of guys was gave them some closure. Right. And, you know, they recognize that their time has passed and it's time to move on. There are some guys for them it was an opportunity to get out in front of scouts and personnel people and do it one more time. It's interesting that they did have to pay $400 a piece to participate in this combine. And, you know, that dream dies hard, and it dies hard for everybody that plays the game, you know, that aspires to be in the National Football League, and certainly harder for those who've been in the National Football League and have experienced the lifestyle and all that comes with it, and then you're told one day that you're not good enough anymore. That's hard to accept, and a lot of guys are going to continue to try and battle and find a way back to the league if they can, and this is an opportunity that the league provided for a number of veteran players. And it was interesting talking to Matt Burke because he was involved in the selection process for this thing. And, you know, there was an avalanche of response by ex-players trying to get another workout, get another opportunity. But I think for most everybody concerned, it was really enlightening as just how fast it moves past you once it's past you.
And how quickly does it go, Jeff? Because I mean, you can work out on your own as much as you like. But I mean, have you seen it where you've had guys that have been out of the game for, you know, just a matter of months, and that those physical skills have deteriorated? I mean, how quickly can it?
Yeah, I'll tell you there's a guy that we had in the CFL named Clarence Verdan, and Clarence was a member of the Fun Bunch with the Washington Redskins when they won Super Bowls, and was a great returner in the NFL for Ron Meyer with the Indianapolis Colts. And we brought Clarence in, you know, after he had turned 30, and you know, he was only two or three seasons away from a Pro Bowl, you know, Pro Bowl berth as an NFL player. And when he came to us, it was like, this can't be the same guy. I mean, he looked the same, but he just had lost the juice. And it's interesting how it goes. When it goes fast. And they always say it's the legs are the first to go. Your will is there, but your legs just don't do it anymore. And, you know, I think you saw that not only with Felix Jones, but with a number of guys that were actually shocked when they heard their 40 time announced.
Michael Bush was one of those. The running back, he ran a 4.91, and he was actually, you know, his comments were, "You've got to be expletive me. There you go. There goes my career." And he said it hurts. I mean, he knew right there as soon as he'd run that time. Michael Sam was over 5 seconds on both of his 40-yard dashes. They don't name the player in this report, but somebody ran a 6, which is kind of Rich Eisen territory. So, I guess it was tough. I like the idea of it being in where the owners' meeting was, though, Jeff, because, you know, if these teams can take a look at the players, obviously you want to make it as easy on the teams as possible because, you know, only two guys have been signed so far. Devon Carr, a cornerback, has signed with Indy, and a wide receiver, Nathan Slaughter, has signed with Arizona. So if this is if these are the longest of long shots, then these scouts aren't going to travel all around the country to see them, are they?
No, and you know, like, for example, Slaughter ran the fastest time, fastest 40, you know, at the veteran combine. So obviously you take a flyer on a guy that can run. But, you know, in other cases, it solidifies the evaluation of a guy. Michael Sam, for example, never had combine times or workout times that were commensurate with what he did on the field as a player at Missouri. And then he goes to, you know, the Rams last year and leads the Rams in sacks during the preseason. You know, he plays way better than his times are. But at, you know, what's caught him every step of the way is they just can't get past the fact that he's a 5-flat 40 guy.
Yep.
And I think again that those times reconfirmed the evaluation that the scouts have on him. You know, there's a lot of pipelines, you know, into the league, and you got to find a way. There's like I said, there's a number of guys that have, you know, gone this way also.
Jeff, if you're a coach or a scout or, you know, Michael Sam did attend the veteran combine, maybe didn't wow people physically. Does it bother you that he's not off working out now and that he's dancing with the stars?
You know, that's one of the things that you're going to get when you get him. And that's what I think, you know, it's really difficult sometimes for players to understand that, you know, you're being evaluated. We say this all the time to kids, but you're being evaluated in everything that you do. And obviously with Michael's, you know, sexual orientation, he's going to bring a certain amount of attention to whatever team he goes to. And then in addition, now you're involved in all these other things outside, and, you know, it's just, in my opinion, it's not a great idea for a young guy to get involved in all those things if you really want to be a football player. Focus on being a football player. Mm-hmm. You're a marginal testing football player to begin with. And one of the things that I say to players in training camp is you got to find ways to keep them from telling you no.
Right.
And, you know, don't give them excuses. Don't give them reasons to not bring you in or to cut you or, you know, trade you or move you or whatever. Some guys, again, get so caught up in all of the other things around football and all the opportunities that come to them because of football and their notoriety. Well, you know, again, those things, if you're a marginal guy, you got to understand, you don't want people to say, well, you know, we'd like to bring Michael Sam in. We think he's got some, you know, possibilities, led the Rams in sacks during the preseason. But, exactly, but do we want to deal with all the other stuff, all the media circus, all the, you know, all that stuff? It's just, again, a little short-sighted, in my opinion, by the athlete. You know, it's interesting you hear J.J. Watt talk about his off seasons and what he does, and he said, I've got a very short lifespan in this business, and I've got to do everything I can to maximize my time in the business. I've got the rest of my life for all that other stuff.
I think sometimes that's driven by the agents, Jeff, and that's where the players are poorly advised, because the agent comes in and wants to maximize a player's profile again, and maybe doesn't look at it just purely from a football X's and O's point of view. I'm not going to name names, but I've seen situations where low on the totem pole type players have, you know, it's been suggested by agents that, oh, we'll do a fly on the wall thing about this person. And you're like, hang on a minute, you're going to turn up at a team as one of the lowest players on that roster and be surrounded by camera crews and things like that. I mean, it shouldn't work that way. You know, you earn your stripes on the field. And as Jared Allen often said, I know it's an old cliche, but, you know, rookies or players that haven't proven themselves yet should be seen but not heard. I mean, I don't think it should go to that extent where you can't speak up, but you know what I mean? You should be proving yourself on the field before all of that other stuff comes around. But I don't think agents think that way.
No, and I think sometimes kids get, you're exactly right, they're short-sighted in terms of what, you know, okay, well, we can capitalize on this media opportunity or this whatever, but they don't recognize the long-term effects of, you know, that kind of attention or that kind of situation. So, you know, again, I would, if I was advising Michael, which I'm not, I'd be, keep a low profile, you know, again, understand who you are and what you are in terms of their vision of you as a player. You're a guy with marginal numbers, right? Workout numbers, height, weight, speed, 40 time, all that stuff. So you've got to be seen as just this, and that's a committed 100% football guy. Mm. And, you know, again, that's just my personal take on it, but I've seen enough of it in 30 years in this business where guys get short-sighted, like you say, and agents get even more short-sighted because they're thinking about the dollars and cents of it on the short term rather than the long term.
One more piece of news, Jeff, and it centers around an agent. Adrian Peterson's agent, Ben Dogra, he refused to have dinner with Vikings general manager Rick Spielman this week. And he's also said to Jarrett Bell of the USA Today that we want out of Minnesota. And there's a feeling that Adrian wasn't supported by the Vikings organization. I know, actually, this centers around Kevin Warren, who's just been named as the chief operating officer. I know Kevin personally, and Kevin had some comments when Adrian got into trouble last year. That it wasn't, you know, acceptable behavior, but, you know, we hoped he could be a Viking, but it wasn't full endorsement from the Vikings or from the man who is now their chief operating officer. So it looks like Peterson wants out of Minnesota. What I would say to this, Jeff, and it was actually been tweeted the same to me by a gentleman called Scuba Lee 72. Did Adrian Peterson really expect full support from the Minnesota Vikings, 100% support? Because he admitted he did something wrong. He apologized for it. So shouldn't the team have therefore been a little bit upset with him?
Well, I think the team has a right to be upset with him because, again, you're talking about, you know, he's besmirched the Viking name or brand, if you will, with his behavior. But I do understand his position that, you know, that you want as a teammate, you want support at the tough times. Now, when this thing has gotten this acrimonious, where the agent refuses to have dinner with the, you know, with the general manager, that's sending all the wrong signals to the team. That I think this is one of those ones where let's just get a divorce and go our separate ways. Right. And I think both will be healthier for it. And I think that's the angle that they're taking from Peterson's camp. And, you know, the Vikings are caught in a tough situation because they've got a PR issue. This is the same thing with, you know, the Greg Hardy signing in with the Cowboys. That, you know, these kinds of people who have guys who've had these kinds of events off the field, there's, you know, they have a trail. They come with baggage. Mm. And you have to decide as an organization whether you're willing to put up with that. Now, again, the Vikings may just say, you know, it's time for us to move on from Adrian Peterson, and he was a great Viking, and, you know, make it positive and move on. The Cowboys, on the other hand, appear to say, well, Greg Hardy's off-the-field stuff and his behavior is, you know, it's a reasonable risk to get an elite pass rusher. So each organization will make its own decisions in that regard.
And I think we shouldn't be naive to think that there's a business thing behind this as well. I mean, Adrian Peterson would be perfectly happy not to have the support of the Vikings management if the 3 years and $45 million left on his contract was guaranteed, but not a single dollar of that money is guaranteed, Jeff. So there's probably a heavy financial element to this. It's not just the "you didn't love me when I wanted to be loved" situation, is it? Here, there's a business side to this.
It always runs deeper than that, you know, than the emotional part of it. And it's a, you know, you understand that it's a business.
Yep.
And I'm sure he's from everything that I can gather, they're angling to try and find a way to get him to the Cowboys. And, you know, that would make sense. He's a Texas kid. It's closer to home. You know, obviously there are a lot of positives about him being in Dallas. You know, the great offensive line he'd play behind. And, you know, but again, the Vikings, you know, have right to compensation. And, you know, they, you know, anytime you have a player, you have an asset. And until, you know, it's very, very, very poor business to move assets for less than, you know, market value. And he's going to come at a real high cost. So, you know, we've seen this before with the Herschel Walker trade, actually, when you talk about those two teams. And, you know, back in that day, Herschel Walker was a great back that, you know, that Jimmy Johnson moved to the Vikings. And lo and behold, that trade, you know, brought so many draft picks that ended up being great players for the Cowboys. That was one of the key things in turning the Cowboys around. So if the Vikings move him, expect that you're going to get, you know, that they're going to get something significant in return.
All right, let's go on to our state of the franchise series then. And we're going to start with the Houston Texans, who went 9-7 in 2014. They pick 16th in this year's NFL draft. And really, 9-7, first year under Bill O'Brien, was a pleasant surprise considering they didn't find their answer at quarterback. Ryan Mallett, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Case Keenum, and Tom Savage all saw time under center. So that's the positive. Jeff, I'm going to upset some Texans fans here, because with the exception of Baltimore in week 16, I would argue they didn't have very many quality wins. Their wins were over Washington, Oakland, Buffalo, Tennessee twice, Jacksonville twice, and Cleveland. When they played good teams, they lost to Dallas, Indianapolis, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, and they lost to the Giants. So, first of all, quick glance at the Texans. Are you happy they went 9-7, or is there something to that that stat about who they beat?
Well, I think there's a couple things about that, Neil. Number one, this is a team 2 years ago we thought was a dark horse candidate to get to the Super Bowl. Then they had that horrible, disappointing season. Kubiak got fired. All the changes came. Bill O'Brien has put his stamp on this team in year one, and I think there's no bigger indication of that they let go Andre Johnson, who's been the face of the franchise there for 12 years. And when you're willing to move a guy like that, that was tough. There was hard feelings in that deal. But I think he has a strong commitment to the direction that he wants to go. As we look at these three teams today, you know, they're all 9-7 teams, and each is a little bit different, but each of them shares the one, you know, similarity is they're not quite good enough to get over the hump. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we're looking at. Now, I think this team has done some pretty good things in the offseason to help themselves. I think bringing in Vince Wilfork, a veteran inside guy presence, helps them on defense. It helps them in their locker room. Mm. The bottom line is for this team and for a number of teams in the National Football League, until they get the quarterback thing straightened out, they're going to be 9-7, 7-9, you know, one of those types of teams.
One of the have-nots.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you look at that quarterback list and, you know, you got a battle supposedly between Brian Hoyer and Ryan Mallett. Well, those aren't, you know, exactly big-name quarterbacks where you're thinking, wow, here we go, right? Mm. They lost their longtime center, Chris Myers, was a cap casualty, and he had been a great player for them. Now, I think bringing in Cecil Shorts is going to help them. That, you know, DeAndre Hopkins is shown he can be a number one, I think.
Yeah.
And I think Cecil Shorts can be a good, solid two around him. They re-signed Kareem Jackson, which I think was important. Again, what are they going to get this year from Jadeveon Clowney?
That's the worry, isn't it? Yeah, look at
that. Yeah, that's going to be another one.
Well, because Bill O'Brien here's a guy that you might not be back on the field till August, Jeff. We had that microfracture surgery in his knee.
And that is a very tough surgery to come back from. It takes a long time. So again, you're talking about the first pick in the draft, and they've gotten very little return on that. So if they can get play from him, and, you know, obviously with the best player and best D lineman certainly in the National Football League lined up opposite him and Vince Wilfork inside, particularly on rundowns, you're pretty stout on defense. I mean, they have a chance. And I think this is an O'Brien team that'll continue to be at this 9-7, 10-6 threshold until they can get, better at quarterback.
Let's have a look at some of the numbers then. Offense was 17th in the NFL. They were 5th in rushing, 24th in passing, which kind of alludes to what Jeff's talking about with the quarterback. Defense was 16th, but they did lead the league in creating turnovers. They parted ways with Andre Johnson and Ryan Fitzpatrick, re-signed Kareem Jackson, Mallett, Derek Newton at offensive tackle. They added Raheem Moore from the Broncos, and then the others that Jeff mentioned, Cecil Shorts, Brian Hoyer, and Vince Wilfork. Lost Brooks Reed to Atlanta. Let's go through the roster there. So, quarterback, really, they're still looking at that. Jeff, we've seen an addition at wide receiver. Do you still feel they need to add something else there? Because this is a good draft for wide receivers. And also, they don't seem to have that game-changing tight end that, they've probably been missing.
Yeah, again, you look at that roster, and you look at the end of the season, they're playing Garrett Graham and C.J. Fedorowicz, and, those are guys. Those aren't impact guys. Mm-hmm. And certainly I think more playmakers would help take some of the heat off of the quarterback if he has more guys around him who are capable of making plays. When you look at this football team offensively, they really, when you consider that they were fifth in the league in rushing, got an awful lot out of what they had. And can they continue to squeeze every bit of juice out of the playmakers that they have? We'll wait and see. But I think certainly in the draft, where they can put themselves in a position is to get more guys that can make plays with the ball in their hands. Arian Foster, how much does he have left? Now, the Alfred Blue's a good-looking young back.
Yep.
But again, when you look at that crew of receivers, DeAndre Hopkins, we said, can be a player. Demaryius Johnson is really more a return guy. He's a small guy that, maybe plays in the slot and give you some things in the slot, but he's really more of a return type guy. So I would say receiver, tight end, and certainly, again, you're always looking to upgrade yourself, particularly if you're going to run the football. You want to upgrade yourself along the offensive line.
You mentioned Clowney earlier, Jeff, and he did only play 4 games last year. And the Texans have got this 3-4 defense, which was crying out for big nose tackle, which they've now got in Vince Wilfork. If Vince can, squeeze a couple more years out of that body, he's been around for a while. But if he can play at a high level, then the interior of the defensive line should be set. But you look at how much pressure J.J. Watt creates in a three-man front, and I just think they don't get enough from their edge rushers. I mean, edge rushers for the Texans in 2014 provided 9.5 sacks, 5 of those from Whitney Mercilus. And there's not much else there because Clowney didn't get on the field and produce. So, there's a question mark there, isn't there? Because shouldn't they be producing big numbers with J.J. Watt creating up front?
Yeah. Well, what you want is obviously those big outside linebackers to force the protection to where the back has to block them. And when you get those one-on-one matchups, that's one of the principles of the 3-4. You get those one-on-one matchups between an outside linebacker and a back, you should win those. Well, you look, they lost Brooks Reed, as you talk about, and then you look at Mercilus. Mercilus got his 5 sacks. That's a 12 or 14 sack position in the 3-4.
Yep.
So they would really benefit from Clowney if they can get some play out of him. Now, he plays so far beyond what got most guys in that scheme can do, and he's really the only rusher that they have from the outside. Jared Crick's a good football player, but Jared Crick's kind of a rotational guy. He's not really a feature guy. So that they're going to slide protection to him. They're going to double him when they can double him. He needs some help. And, you look at outside linebacker. There are a lot of them in the draft that are 3-4 kind of guys, and we'll cover this later, but that's one place where I think the draft's rich is in outside linebackers. So certainly the Texans, when you look at them defensively, you know, I think they're good enough in the back end, certainly, and if they can create an outside rusher that in this draft, and then the guy I think that they need to get a bounce back season from is Brian Cushing inside.
I'm going to ask you about that. Yep.
Yeah, you know, he when he came into the league, obviously was fantastic his rookie year. Then he had a substance issue, a PED issue. It wasn't a substance issue, and was suspended. And, you know, has never really gotten back to that level that he played at as, you know, as a young player in Houston.
So, back-to-back knee injuries, Jeff. 2012-2013 meant he played a total of 12 games over 2 years. He did play 14 last year and had 72 tackles, but I don't think we're looking at the same player as early in his career, are we?
Not right yet. And what you hope from those knee injuries, and you know, obviously they always take a bit of you away, but typically with a knee, and I think they're going to find the same thing with Clowney, it's the second year after the injury before that guy actually comes back. Now, Cushing's had two, so hopefully having played 14 last year, he's got more confidence in his knee, and then a whole off season without a surgery, you know, without surgery to really get yourself back into, you know, peak condition and get your step back, because he was an impact player as a rookie. I mean, there's no question about it.
Jeff, I always associate Raheem Moore now with you pulling your hair out, sitting alongside me in the studios when he let Jacoby Jones get behind him in that playoff game. But whenever I see him, that's all I think about is you just like perplexed and could not believe what had happened. But he's a decent player, isn't he? Actually, although we might give him some criticism for that one play, but I think he's a decent safety, isn't he? Who's going to come in and help in the back end?
Yeah, I think so, and I think that's a good signing for him. And you know, and I think more critical in the back end maybe was getting Kareem back.
Yep.
You know, getting Kareem Jackson back, and you know, everything is Jonathan Joseph is a good football player. But you got to have corners. You know, you got to have corners. And you know, Jackson is one of their better ones, and I think is, you know, certainly in the top 15 in the league. And so having him back is a big plus. You know, and again, with this defense, it's just going to come down, in my opinion, to can you get, if I was them drafting, right, I would say outside linebacker pass rusher has got to be my number one thing. And then, again, give me the best corner available, you know, as I get into the middle rounds. I would not be surprised if this team doesn't take a quarterback, you know, somewhere in the third, fourth round, too, if there's one available that they like. Because, again, you look at that quarterback situation, and it's not a very attractive one. And maybe they can hit on everybody's looking for Tom Brady in the sixth round. But, you know, again, I'm sure if they find a guy that fits their, you know, profile, that, you know, they'll look at a quarterback somewhere in the middle rounds, too.
Just wrapping up on the Texans then, Jeff, we often look at arrow up, arrow down, or arrow kind of staying the same. I guess until they fix that quarterback, they feel to me like a stay-the-same type team. They're going to be middle of the pack, which is what their stats suggest.
That's exactly how I would rate them, as a plateaued team, until they can get either more playmakers around the quarterback,
yep,
or they can get a better quarterback. And you know, again, defensively, they could be a really nasty bunch because they do create turnovers, and they do have some guys that are big play players. Now, can they find some rush help? Can they get Clowney back for, you know, even if he's not 100%, certainly as good a physical talent as he is, if he's 90%, he's better than most guys playing in the league. And if they can get some play out of him and a young kid to come in that play on the other side, then they got a chance because they've got some players on defense.
Okay, good stuff, Jeff. That's the Houston Texans. Let's move on then to the San Diego Chargers. They went 9-7 during the regular season, but it was a disappointing end after a 5-1 start to the year. They won just two of their final five games, including a Week 17 loss, which we had on Sky Sports. 19-7, they lost to the Kansas City Chiefs at Arrowhead Stadium. The playoffs were on the line, and they were facing Chase Daniel at quarterback. Offense finished 18th in the NFL. They were a top 10 passing attack, but just 30th in rushing. They were 9th in the NFL on defense, 4th against the pass. They picked 17th in the draft. Some of their moves, they re-signed cornerback Brandon Flowers, re-signed King Dunlap. Jeff, it didn't look like the Chargers made a lot of headlines because they lost Ryan Matthews, they lost Eddie Royal, but some of their signings might be decent under the radar. They added Stevie Johnson at wide receiver, Orlando Franklin along the offensive line, Jacoby Jones as a return man, and Saints cornerback Patrick Robinson. It was a streaky up-and-down season for the Chargers. Lots of injuries. Every time we saw their games on Sky, Jeff, it seemed like players were being carried off the field. I mean, where do you start with this team?
Well, I think, you know, again, this is a team that's a little bit like a dog chasing its tail. And when I say that, they're trying to catch up to their quarterback. Mm-hmm. They have their, you know, again, here's now, I don't know if you rate Phillip Rivers as an elite-level quarterback, but I think he's certainly one of the top quarterbacks in the National Football League.
A lot of game in
but him. You're talking about a guy who's now starting to get up in years, mm-hmm. and has you know, fought through injuries. I mean, tough. He's a warrior.
Oh, yeah.
He's gonna play with, you know, with things that other guys won't even go near the field with. But the question I have is, you know, before his window closes, is this team going to get good enough to get to the next level? You know, how we talk about how these teams are right at that 9-7, 10-6, 6-10, mm-hmm. you know, category. Well, to me, it's the Chargers, the rest of the Chargers catching up to their quarterback before his window closes. And you look at the football team, well, one of the reasons they were so streaky, number one, was Rivers got hurt. True. Mm-hmm. Number two, their offensive line struggled at times. I mean, struggled mightily at times.
Yeah, now, you need to protect Rivers because he's not a mover. He's not a Russell Wilson. He's not running around all over the place.
He's not gonna, you know, get out of the pocket and make things, prolong plays with his feet. He can slide around in the pocket, but he's not a guy that's gonna, you know, like you say, a Russell Wilson type guy that's gonna get around. You've got to be able to protect him. I think, you know, King Dunlap, you know, has got a ways to go, but signing him back, I think, was good. I thought the Franklin signing was outstanding because I think that'll really help the problematic area, because I didn't think their guards played very well last year. And they've got a question now at center. Is Hardwick going to retire? What's his situation?
Probably.
When you look at that, I think that this is a football team that, you know, their right tackle, who they have high hopes for, you know, just at times.
DJ Fluka?
Yeah, he just at times has such problems with speed rushers. But at other times you look at him and you think, wow, that kid can play. He's tough. He's physical. He's nasty. He's got all that stuff. But sometimes he looks a little foot heavy to me. So, again, that's an area they've got to address. I think they need to find help in the offensive line. And Franklin, you know, obviously does upgrade them inside at guard. And you got to be strong inside in your pass protection when you got a quarterback like Phillip Rivers because, again, he doesn't have the ability to move around in the pocket very much.
Absolutely. They do have a quarterback in Phillip Rivers for now, but there have been trade rumors. I mean, this whole future of this franchise is in doubt, Jeff. I mean, there's talks about whether they'll be based long-term in San Diego. We know that's a crumbling stadium there in Southern California, whether they will move to Los Angeles. That led to Phillip Rivers saying that he doesn't really want to live and play in LA. That led to trade rumors and the potential for him to be shipped to the Tennessee Titans. Now, Tom Telesco, the general manager, has come out and says there's no way they trade Phillip Rivers. And I look at this and say, there's no way you can trade Phillip Rivers. But then I said, there's no way the Saints should trade Jimmy Graham. There's no way the Eagles will trade LeSean McCoy. And these things happen. But, you know, Rivers, to me, is one of those. I said he's got game. I mean, he's one of those that just plays with a lot of heart, a lot of character. You know, the Week 16 game we had on Sky on the Saturday night before Christmas, where he comes back and beats San Francisco in overtime. That's classic Phillip Rivers, what we saw right there. But, I mean, they're not going to trade him, are they?
No, and you know what? When things like this happen, when people start connecting the dots that are out there, you know, then you know it
could end up anywhere.
It sends shockwaves through the league because I'm going to tell you something. All they've talked about relative to the Bills the last couple of days isn't Charles Clay and you know the fact they got Percy Harvin and all that stuff is well, Rivers is on the market, so we got to go get Rivers because that's the one piece that we don't have and will put us in the Super Bowl.
Right.
And I'm sure if you're, you know, Chicago and you're a number of teams in the league that, you know, like we just talked about, the Texans, everybody, all their fan bases are saying, hey, if Rivers is on the market, we got to go get that guy. I got to believe Rivers is not on the market because I just think that Telesco and McCoy have done a really good job. We talked about this on the broadcast. I think this is an organization that knows where it wants to go as a football organization. I'm not talking about, you know, as a team, whether they want to play in L.A. or not play in L.A. or all that stuff. That's just distractions to the football guys. But when you look at how they have built this team, they've done a great job in their time there of trying to catch up to the quarterback. Now, you know, there are some areas still that they have to improve. And, you know, we talked about offensive line being one of them. You go out and you get Jacoby Jones, who gives you that big play, you know, big hitter as a returner, speed guy. I'm not as big a Stevie Johnson fan probably as you are. I think he comes with some baggage, and I don't see him as a, you know, I don't see him as a, as
a descending player, isn't he now, Jeff?
Yeah, I think he's a, that's where I say Eddie Royal. I would have tried to keep Eddie Royal because I think Eddie Royal is an ascending player.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, you look at a guy like Stevie, you know, had trouble here in Buffalo, got moved out of Buffalo, you know, goes to San Francisco, last one season there. Now he's in, you know, in San Diego. So, and again, at his age, I think he is a descending player, but they may get a year out of him, good year out of him. And if they do, I'm sure that they'll look at it as a positive. I thought they did a good job in the offseason, Neil, helping a corner situation, you know, because, you know, they've got Eric Weddle at safety, who's an impact guy. And, you know, they re-signed Brandon Flowers, which was big. And then Patrick Robinson and Jimmy Wilson give them three corners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to put in that mix, and you know, you're
get Jason Verrett back. He only played six games last year, Jeff, who, you know, slot corner, who could be, you know, valuable as well. So they get him back. They're pretty good in the secondary, aren't they?
Yeah, you really have a bunch back there, and exactly as you said, you got to have that slot corner these days in the National Football League, and Verrett is certainly that guy for them. Here's one of the things when you look at that defense, and I think Pagano does an outstanding job of scheming with what he has, right? But when you look at them, they drafted Manti Te'o real high.
Mm-hmm.
And Manti Te'o is a sideline-to-sideline linebacker. He's a really good pass defender. But where he struggles, and it was the same thing when he was a college player at Notre Dame, is when big bodies get on him. He has a hard time disengaging from big guys and getting to the football. I think they need a big defensive lineman inside. Somebody, a space eater that can go in there and demand the double team and keep people off of him so that he can run, because he's shown, and he really did improve as a downhill linebacker last year, but he does have the athletic skills, and he's a playmaker, and you know, he's obviously loves to play and all that, but he really needs that big guy inside. That's where I thought they might go with Wolfork, because that's an area of need for them. And then I think, you know, you look at running back and you got to say, you know, that's another area where I wouldn't be surprised. And, you know, we always talk about it being an undervalued position, Neil.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at them, you lose Ryan Matthews, you know, and right now the only guy you got is Brandon Oliver. And I think Brandon Oliver was a great find as a free agent.
Early on, I think
people
kind of figured him out a bit, Jeff, or he hit some sort of wall because – I mean, I don't know what it was. I mean, obviously, physically, he's not going to stand up to that pound in the same way. He's a very, very small back, isn't he? So maybe that was what it was.
That's exactly my scouting report on him. I mean, he's short. He's strong. He's physically. I mean, he's an impressive kid to look at physically. He's a rock.
Yep.
But he's not very big, and he's kind of a one-dimensional back.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see him as an every-down back. I see him as a change-of-pace back that can really be a good change-of-pace back, but not a feature back. So I think that's an area where they could go. And I think, too, you got to start looking at the edge rushers now. Freeney's getting up in
age. I've got that written here, Jeff. That was my last question I was going to ask you with this team. I've said 3-4 defense. So where are the dominant edge rushers? Because Freeney's probably been, well, I think he's been moved on, hasn't he, now? So Melvin Ingram had 4 sacks last year. The other one who's listed as first on the depth chart at the moment is Turek Williams, outside linebacker. He had 18 tackles, no sacks. So, you know, it's a staple of this defense, isn't it, that kind of edge rush?
Exactly, and if you're going to be a 3-4 guy, that's what you want. And you know, they had some older guys that were, functioned in the defense. And like I said, I think Pagano does a great job of scheming around what he has and junking it up and, you know, giving his guys a chance. But he needs better players on the edge. He needs more impact on the edge. And when he gets more impact on the edge, and if he can find himself a great big inside guy to sit in there on first down and you know, second and medium and take the heat off of Manti Te'o, I think they're headed in the right direction. I think this is a well-coached football team that's just a little talent shy right now as Tom Telesco and the personnel people keep trying to, you know, load the wagons in San Diego.
So on the way up, on the way down, slightly plateaued, slightly up. Where are we seeing this? I mean, I always have a good feeling about the Chargers. They get ignored a little bit. They don't get as many headlines as other teams around the NFL, but I'm with you. I think they're a well-run team.
I do, and I think this is a team on, if I had to, you know, say ascending, descending, or plateaued, I'd say slightly ascending. And I think if they can get healthy, they have a chance to, you know, certainly be in the playoff hunt once again. And I think Denver has, you know, I think Denver's come back to them a little bit. You know, I think there's, I think there's going to be opportunities here. And certainly as long as you got Phillip Rivers on 2 feet and he's healthy and competing, you got a chance.
All right, let's complete our 9-7 trifecta then this week with the Kansas City Chiefs. Their form was streaky, really, in 2014. They started 0-2. They got themselves to 7-3 with a big win over Seattle. Then they lost 3 in a row. They ended up finishing second in the AFC West but failed to make the playoffs. Offense was 25th in the NFL. They were 10th in rushing, 29th in passing. Defense was 7th. In the league. They were second in passing, 28th in rushing. They put the franchise tag on outside linebacker Justin Houston, who had 22 sacks. They lost Rodney Hudson to Oakland, their center, which is a bit of a worry because the offensive line was a problem and he was their best offensive lineman. They got rid of Dwayne Bowe. They signed wide receiver Jeremy Maclin from Philadelphia. They signed safety Tyvon Branch from the Raiders. They traded for Ben Grubbs at guard and they re-signed cornerback Ron Parker. So, Jeff, the one thing, and just actually we'll start with Alex Smith. He ended the year on IR. He missed the final game with a lacerated spleen. He did have a good quarterback rating, 93.4, but he had just 18 touchdowns in 15 games and just 7 yards per attempt. We sat quite often in the Sky Sports studio and talked about how, okay, it's fine if you're going to dink and dunk and lots of crossing patterns and, you know, you're going to work the field horizontally as well as vertically. They didn't really do it vertically at all. But that only works in certain situations. And then when it came time for them to chase the game, they couldn't do it. This was as a passing offense, I guess if we start there, this was a limited team.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the glaring things to me about this football team is production from your outside receivers.
Yep. Definitely.
Or lack of.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
that famous stat, no touchdowns for them this year from the Chiefs wide receivers, wasn't it? So.
That's an incredible statistic that you can go 16 games in the National Football League with the rules the way they are today and a quarterback with as high a quarterback rating mm-hmm. as Alex Smith had and not get a single touchdown from a wide receiver. That's shocking.
Yeah.
And obviously that there's, you know, that's the old saying, when there's smoke, there's fire. So somewhere they've got to get some vertical passing in that offense.
And the addition of Macklin's probably not just enough, is it, Jeff? I mean, that's not,
well, I think
not going to cover it all, is it?
Macklin's a step in the right direction. You know, the reality of it is Dwayne Bowe was past his time.
Yep.
He was making too much money. Mm-hmm. Macklin is a guy that Andy Reid knows. He drafted him in Philadelphia. I'm sure that, you know, he covets have an opportunity to work with him again. But, you know, when you look at a team, you always talk about the ability to, you know, to stretch the field and, you know, take away double teams on one side of the field. And you know, Donnie Avery's a speed guy that never really has played at the level, you know, that you would anticipate he would play. You know, they re-signed Jason Avant. Jason Avant's just a guy. I mean, he's not a guy that you're going to go, wow, got Jason Avant, you know. And so I think that's an area. If they can find a big play receiver, that will certainly help them. Let's be honest. That's not, I don't think, ever going to be the way that they're going to design their offense.
You know, it's around Charles and Niall Davis, isn't it? And
absolutely. It's about the running game, the play action. You know, and again, their quarterback fits nicely into that scheme.
Yep.
But if this team is going to get to the next level, and that's what we're talking about here, these 9-7 teams that are trying to turn themselves in, you know, to 13-3 teams, right? Well, you're going to have to get more play from your wide receivers. You're going to have to get somebody outside to step up and really play well for you. And, you know, they've got two really fine running backs. The other problem, I think, one of the reasons why they can't get the ball outside the wide receivers is, you know, they're not very good on the offensive line.
They're really not. And they spent the first overall pick on Eric Fisher a little while ago, and that's not really worked out, has it?
Yeah, well, that's exactly where I was going to go, Neil. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, that's the first thing I was going to talk about is, you took this kid from Central Michigan, number one in the draft, first player picked in the draft, and he's going to be your franchise left tackle, your building block on the offensive line. And again, 2 years into that now, we look at him and he still has the same problem, and that's with power rushers. He's just not physical enough. And you know how it is in the National Football League, Neil, and we watch this every weekend. And, you know, if the book on a guy is that he can't handle power, he's going to get power every week.
Jeff, is there any excuse for that? Because, I mean, is it that he hasn't got the functional strength and therefore isn't putting in the time in the weight room, or he's completely plateaued in that he can't get any stronger, or is it sometimes a case where they just don't have the nasty in them?
Well, I think it can be any of those or a combination of those. But here, let's talk about him first.
Yep.
And let's talk about when he came out and we looked at him and we said, great feet, great balance, athletic, all that stuff. He's playing in the MAC. All right, against second-level defensive linemen, to be honest with you. The MAC conference is not a conference where you're going to go find great pass rushers. He's not playing in the SEC. He doesn't see that kind of guy. And so you get kind of a false read on him. And then, you know, you can't work a guy out and practice, see whether he can handle power rush or not. You're going to get that when they come to training camp, because if, you know, in the Senior Bowl, you might get a little bit of it, but you know, the reality of it is, if you looked hard at the guy, the one question that there was about him when he was a college senior was, how physical is he? And you know, when you get up to the National Football League and you're lining up against the best of the best, whatever your weakness is, you're going to get, and you're going to get it down after down after down until you can handle it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
They've got a couple of other decent targets. Travis Kelce was an emerging tight end, very athletic, can run after the catch. And I wonder what you think about DeAnthony Thomas, Jeff, as he goes into year two. He had 14 carries, 113 yards, and a touchdown. He was a threat on special teams. He scored on an 81-yard punt return. He did have a 78-yard kickoff return, and he had 23 catches. Didn't have a lot of yards for his catches, actually, 156 yards, so only a 6.8 average. But do you see an emerging, expanded role for DeAnthony Thomas?
Yeah, I mean, here's a guy that, I mean, I love this guy because he's the guy that said, when I played at Oregon, I never got tackled. I mean, come on, man. But he's certainly not shy. But wow, I'm telling you, when you watched him, when he got the ball in his hand, no matter how they got the ball in his hand, whether it was return game or as a receiver or out of the backfield or whatever they did, he is electric. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, it's interesting that, you know, he came in and made such an impact. Now, the challenge with these kinds of guys is he's not really a wide receiver. He's not really a tailback. What is he? Mm-hmm. And, you know, but he is a threat with the ball in his hands. And if they can continue to find ways, invent ways to get him, you know, slip screens and bubble screens and, you know, whatever they got to do to get it in his hands, because, you know, again, you put him on the field with Jamaal Charles, and that's two playmakers right there, you know. And they're going to have to find it until they can develop another receiver. You know, he may be some of the answer as they expand his role. I like him a lot.
Yeah, looking on defense, they did struggle against the run, and they were hurt. Early season, they lost Mike DeVito, and you might say, well, Mike DeVito, you know, he's not a name, but Mike DeVito was a strong defensive lineman, a journeyman, workman-like defensive lineman who's very good against the run. And they lost Derek Johnson at inside linebacker. Both of those were to Achilles injuries. They were very good against the pass, as I mentioned, second in the NFL. And a lot of that comes from, they were good, I thought they were good in the secondary actually this year, or decent. A lot of it came from those two edge rushers, though. And Jeff, since they've played together in 2011, Justin Houston and Tam Barale have combined for 17 and a half sacks in 2011, 19 sacks in 2012, 22 sacks in 2013, and 28 sacks in 2014. With those kind of guys coming off the edge, you can be just decent in the secondary, can't you?
Yeah, and I think Bobby Sutton, the defensive coordinator, does a great job of moving those guys around. You know, again, we talked about that when we did our Telestrator piece on the Chiefs, how hard they make it on offensive linemen because they got Houston and Holly lined up all over the place. I think when you, again, as we talk about the Chiefs on defense, this is a team that really gets an awful lot out of what they have. You know, you look at them and you talk about Josh Malaga and James Michael Johnson, and they're good football players, but that's not, they're not first line linebackers in the National Football
League.
Yeah, same
with Hussein Abdullah at safety. He's kind of just solid, but he gets the job done.
Yeah, and you know, you don't shoot, you don't lose an Eric Berry and not take a step back.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So their defense is extremely good on the edges. Right. You know, Sean Smith, Philip Gaines. They got some players on the edges. Mm-hmm. Right. Holly, you know, Houston. But where they need to improve again is in the middle of that defense. And I think that that's a nickel cornerback would help them.
Yep.
I think they got to think about, you know, on defense, their draft will be if you can find an impact linebacker. You know, like you talked about, DeVito is one of those guys that great defenses seem to all have, and that's that guy that doesn't get the ink, doesn't get the publicity, takes all the blocks.
Like a Brett Kiesel in Pittsburgh was for
many years. Absolutely, and those guys are priceless, and they work. They come to play every weekend. They're grinders, you know, but they make players around them better. And that's where the Chiefs did show a little bit of a softness on defense was in the middle of their run defense. And you know, if you were going to play the Chiefs, you certainly didn't want to get to second and long and third and long, because that's when, you know, Holly and Houston became such a factor. So they saw so much run. And, you know, again, you got to, if you have great pass rushers, the thing you got to do defensively is get that team. You got to win on first down. And, you know, we say all the time, you know, you earn the right to rush the passer on first down. And so if you can play better first down defense, which usually means you got your big guys on the field and your linebackers have to, you know, be downhill linebackers, then you can let those pass rushers hunt when it gets to be second and medium and third and long.
Chiefs pick 18th in the first round of the NFL draft. At the moment, Jeff, I think they're a very talented team. There's talent across the board. We've just listed some of the guys that can make plays for them. I have them as a plateaued team right now, but if they can draft a young wide receiver to add to that wide receiver core, and they can add another addition to their offensive line, I might give them a slight arrow up.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, if then these are ifs, right? If, you know, Fisher can figure it out and sink his hips a little bit and play a little firmer against the power rushers, if Eric Berry can come back healthy.
Fingers crossed. You
know, if, you know, there's a lot of ifs here in Kansas City.
Yeah.
If that outside receiver can develop, if DeAnthony Thomas, you know, continues, you know, get the football in his hands, if Jamaal Charles can continue to show that he's a, you know, game breaker as a back, this team has a chance. Now, is it a Super Bowl team yet? I'm not willing to say that, but I think of the three teams, this team has the best chance to get to that next level.
There's a lot of ifs there, Jeff, but one thing's for sure, they're coming to Wembley Stadium in 2015, which means I get to go to Kansas and eat some barbecue food.
There you go, baby. Hey, you know what? If you think about this, I was thinking about the other day about the international games, the London games, and Neil, it is amazing if you're a fan in the UK about the players that are coming to Wembley next year. You're going to see the best pass rusher in the National Football League in Justin Houston in Wembley, right? And you look around and you see the teams that are coming, and the Bills are coming. Normally you go, well, you know, the Bills, right? Well, Shady McCoy, Percy Harvin, Charles Clay, the great defense. I mean, you're gonna see great football played.
Dominic Sue and Darrell Revis in the first game.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about two of the elite level defense. If you go around and you say, okay, is there a corner better than Revis? Well, that's debatable, but you know he's in the top five. Is there an inside defensive lineman better than Ndamukong Suh? Probably not. Is there a better edge pass rusher than Justin Houston? Probably not. And so you go around and you say, if you're a fan, if you're an NFL fan, you're going to see the best of the best in London this coming year.
Yeah, we are. And that's a perfect segue into the mailbag, Jeff, because we had a question from Scott Carey, who asked us which London game looks the best post-free agency. And he says the Bills off-season makes their game against Jacksonville look a lot better. I mean, I think you've just alluded to a few players across all three games. We're going to get to see some of the very best of the best. Let's have another couple of questions just to wrap up on Inside the Huddle. This one is from DC, who says, why is it such a big deal to get an LA franchise? Jeff, maybe you answer that from what you see on your side of the pond, because I do wonder that at times, because this is a city that has had franchises before in the Raiders and the Rams, and you know, before that many years ago in the Chargers, the LA Chargers. But they kind of fell out of love with those teams, and they weren't drawing the crowds. But then I've flown into LA to visit and go last year to go to the Dallas Cowboys training camp up in Oxnard. And as you come into land, you just see how big LA is, and you think, well, why is the NFL not here? I mean, tell us why is it such a big deal to get an LA franchise?
Well, I think you hit it right on the top of your right on the top of the nail. I mean, it's just you fly into the place and you just see how immense it is, and you recognize how many television sets are there and how many opportunities for t-shirts on backs and hats on heads, and obviously this is a revenue-based industry, and you've got that huge, I think it's the second biggest city in the United States, and really LA stretches from Santa Barbara in the north all the way to San Diego in the south. It's just one continuous city, so obviously that's the biggest thing, and you know, you're talking about the second biggest media market in the United States, and you know, you look at those teams and you know, the problems that those teams have had have all really hinged around stadiums, right? If you consider it, you know, you go back and the Raiders were at the Coliseum, and, you know, it's not a great part of L.A. to go watch a game, and, you know, it's hard to get in and out of, and, you know, do the Rams play in the Rose Bowl? Do they play it, you know, in the Coliseum? Da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, you know, and everybody says that L.A. is a college town. I don't know if I agree with that. Obviously, UCLA and USC are deeply rooted in that community. But L.A. is a town about winners. Mm. And so if you put a team in there that's exciting and wins, they're going to get followed in L.A. because L.A. is going to, you know, I mean, the L.A. Kings in hockey, when they were going to the Stanley Cup, I mean, I don't know what the percentage of people in Los Angeles even know what hockey is, isn't very great, but all of a sudden it became a place where all the stars
were
hanging
out.
That's
where you had to be, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing with the Lakers. Yeah. When the Lakers were going great, you got Jack Nicholson on the sidelines, Will Smith on the sidelines, and all that. It's a celebrity environment, and that's the kind of thing that the NFL needs to be aware of as they put a team in there. You better have some, you know, celebrity splash and dash and, you know, bling, because that's LA.
All right, take one. I've got one here, Jeff, and then I'll do one more question for you. Why is Seattle negotiating Russell Wilson's contract before the Colts are negotiating Andrew Luck when they were drafted in the same class? That comes from Oliver Nash. And Oliver, the reason is basically if you draft a first rounder, then you can pick up their fifth year option. So Andrew Luck is going to be the Colts are definitely going to pick up that fifth year option. Russell Wilson was a third rounder that year, so he can now negotiate with the Seattle Seahawks ahead of next year. One more from James Baker then, Jeff, to finish off. He says, with a healthy Tony Romo and good free agent signings, including Greg Hardy, are Dallas contenders. That comes from James Baker. So we know that Dallas lost DeMarco Murray. They have signed Greg Hardy. We'll have to wait and see if he sits out the first 6 weeks of the season. But looking at Dallas, there were some decent moves that were, again, under the radar. They added a couple of fullbacks in Ray Agnew and Jed Collins. Andrew Gakkar, the safe linebacker from San Diego. Corey White, a cornerback from New Orleans. Darren McFadden, who you spoke about last week. And they've added a thumping middle linebacker in Jasper Brinkley from Minnesota. So I guess as long as you've got Dez Bryant, Jason Witten, Tony Romo, that offensive line, those additions, they have to be a contender, right? They were close enough last year.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think the foundation of the offense is the offensive line. It's probably the best young offensive line in football. Mm-hmm. Whoever's running the football back there is going to make plays for you. Certainly, Witten still shows he's got plenty of game. Dez is now one of the preeminent receivers, in the National Football League. He got Cole Beasley in the slot when you go to three wides, and he's proven that he can now be a player. They re-signed him. Where that football team needs to get better, in my opinion, to get to the next level is you got to start at corner. You got to get yourself some corners. I think we saw that in Green Bay. Sterling Moore, who was one of our SMU kids that was playing there last year, is now gone to Tampa. I think that they've got to find guys who can, not just play that cover two corner and tackle. They've got to find some guys that can play man-to-man, and that'll certainly help the defense. I thought that Rod Marinelli got as much out of that bunch, particularly after the horrible year they'd had before. I thought they got about as much out of that bunch as he could. I think they're better inside with the two linebackers you talked about, Brinkley and Gatchkar.
Yep.
Hardy, if Hardy can get his act together, is proven he can rush the passer. Right now, he comes with a lot of, with a lot of stuff, but he can get to the quarterback. Inside, I think they're still a ways away, but they're improving. That if the defense can continue to grow and continue to get better, I think the offense is at a Super Bowl level now, at a contender level now. Can the rest of the defense catch up to that offense? Is going to be the big key.
All right, Jeff, that's given everyone 1 hour and 2 minutes of stuff to listen to when they're in the gym, walking the dog, whatever it may be. That's what we've given them this week. Aren't we generous?
No, we are. And I tell you what, it's fun. This is so much fun.
It's good fun.
I could do these every day, man.
I know. Oh, there you go. There's a suggestion for next year. Next week, we'll be back with our State of the Franchise. We'll be looking at Buffalo, who Jeff has already mentioned have had such an interesting offseason, Philadelphia, and Cincinnati. Until then, Jeff, thanks very much, mate.
Hey, it's been awesome, and aloha. You take care.
All right, that's Jeff Reinbold. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. It's a USP content production. We'll be back next week. He's already given you a little one, but say goodbye, Jeff.
Aloha.